to get to 1 million downloads for your podcast, my podcast is over 2 million downloads now, is to get the first download. The first episode was downloaded by tens or maybe 100 people on the first one.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to another episode of The Unlocked Show. I'm your host, Tracy Wilson, and I'm super excited to be here with you guys today because I have got a super playful human with me on the show for today's episode, and I'm going to give you a little bit of a rundown on who the amazing Mike Montague is. So I want to know for you guys, as we grow up, like as adults, somehow we seem to lose our I don't know whether it's the ability to play or our want to play, but we were all, you know, serious and proper. And if you've ever felt like that, then today's show is really going to be super useful for you. If you're someone that's interested in bringing back play into your life, you're someone whom, you know, has maybe even been looking down the barrel of, I'm feeling really burnt out, I'm feeling really tired, you know, just feeling pretty crap at the moment, and I just need something to re-energize me, then you want to stay tuned to today's show, because I promise you that today's show is going to help you to rekindle or reconnect with that creative inner child that we have, to bring back the spark, bring back the creativity and the interest that we have back into our lives. And how do we do that in such a way that actually grabs the attention and is able to attract others through the use of play, or through the power of play, I should say, in business and in life. So stay tuned. But let me tell you a little bit about Mike himself. So Mike has been as a seasoned professional when it comes to this. He has spoken on some of the world's biggest stages. He's the global head of content for Sandler Training. He's the host of How to Succeed, a Playful Humans podcast, and he's also the co-author of LinkedIn, The Sandler Way. Now, why is that particularly important? Well, because when we're talking about today's show and it being around how to really attract people, how to find and capture the audience's attention, he absolutely was able to do that with a book that he wrote, because LinkedIn itself picked it up. They noticed what he was doing and they picked it up. He's also performed as an educator, a keynote speaker. He's been on radio, on air. He's been an on-air personality in America for a number of years, karaoke host, game show host, and a DJ. And he's even opened for the likes of Billy Idol and, I'm going to say, Frankie Valli in Kansas City. So, you know, you guys are in for a super treat. Like I said, he's a seasoned professional when it comes to this. I want to give you guys a little bit of a tip before we kick in and we start having this amazing conversation with Mike. But I want you to watch really carefully and listen carefully to what Mike does, because I want you to think about, as a professional, as a performer, as we are, if you're creating your own live show or even your own podcast, just take note of what he does. How does he bring charisma to the screen? How does he weave in the elements of humor, which I know he's going to do today? So all of the things that you see and you hear Mike do on the podcast, I want you to take notes of it, because those are some of the things that you'll be able to use to weave in to your conversations and your interviews and your shows to ensure that you're able to capture attention of others and be noticed and obviously attract the type of people that you want in your life. So that being said, a huge big welcome to Mike to the Unlocked Show. It is fantastic to have you here. And I can't wait to continue this conversation, or to start and continue this conversation. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you so much, Tracy. It's really great to be here. Although the introduction has me a little worried. I normally like a low bar, you know, when you talk about all the great stuff up front and then say, look, he's going to be charismatic and funny. I feel like the only place to go is down, you know, like I like a low bar. He's not very good. He's never done this before. Be gentle with Mike, you know, be nice in the comments. He needs some self-esteem.
Well, hold on, guys. Let's just rewind and we'll say, you know, this guy I've got on, it's the first time he's ever been on a show. He's got no idea what to do. You know, you're going to be very surprised, and hopefully he'll do a good job. So there you go.
There you go. And I appreciate that's actually one of the things. It's I do believe in a low bar. I think that's great. I'm somebody that likes to be successful. And one of the reasons I like to do big shows where there's thousands of people is most of the people are going to like what I do. If there's a couple of bad comments in a video or in a live event, there's thousands of other good ones that overwhelm it. I feel like there's a lot of pressure on one-on-one conversations where if we were just having this meeting, you and I, and it's a sales call or something, then I feel like, okay, I only have one chance to be successful, right? And it's a lot tougher. But the second part of that is, well, there's several things that I love about performing that we can talk about, of being present in the moment and having fun and getting in that flow state. But one that I wanted to highlight up front for people, because I know you help people start their shows, is a lot of times when people see me perform, especially on a big stage, they go, wow, you're such a natural up there. How are you relaxed in front of 1,200 people? And I always have to stop them and say, it was not like that the first time. You're seeing me after over 3,000 performances. So the first one, my hands were clenched so fist, my fingers were turning white. I forgot everything I had to say. I like blacked out. My teacher who was in charge of the performance, like, I think she just passed me and I didn't even redo it. She was just like, that was so bad. I do not want to put you through that torture again. You don't have to speak in front of the class ever again. But 2 years later than that, I was winning awards after some practice.
I'm so pleased that you have said that because, yeah, I mean, a lot of people do think, oh, my God, I can't do that. And we can try and compare ourselves to seasoned professionals, people that have done it, you know, time and time and time again. And as you say, you know, the first episode or the first time you get up on a stage, it can be a little scratchy. You know, you're nervous as heck. The palms are sweaty. The voice is quivering. All of those, you know, telltale signs of, I'm a newbie, seem to come out, but it's totally okay. So, hey, I'm really interested to know, how did you, like, many years on, you're being now a seasoned professional, but how did this all start? Like, how did you get into starting even in radio? Like, how did this all come about? Because now, being a marketing, you know, you teach marketing, you teach stage presence, you're teaching and really trying to understand how to create content that attracts the right sort of audience. How did that all come about?
That's a great question. And it lets me hit one of my other favorite points when I'm talking to audiences like this is the only way to get to a million downloads for your podcast. My podcast is over 2 million downloads now, is to get the first download. The first episode was downloaded by tens or maybe 100 people on the first one. That was 7 years ago. But even before that, when people ask me, how do you get on the radio? You go, you don't get your own show on the radio. I had my own show, a night show at the Top 40 station. So it was Mix 93.3, Kansas City's number one hit music station. And that was great. But nobody hands out shows on the radio. So what I did was I never turned down a chance to be on a microphone. I started in karaoke and hosting karaoke shows in bars and clubs with hardly anybody there, sometimes for one or no people doing the show and practicing. And then I got like a weekend prize guy job where I would go around and drive to gas stations and car dealerships and stuff and be like, hey, you can come on out to the car dealership and win a prize. Come see the new, you know, Ford Focus or whatever it happens to be. And then I got like the Sunday night overnight shift and then the Sunday afternoon shift. And then eventually, you know, Sunday morning and then afternoons and then overnights. And then you work your way up to better shows. But I think there are a couple of lessons here that I would like to highlight for you and your audience. Number one is that's the beauty part. A lot of people want to start with a big audience, but you're not ready for that. Just like I mentioned with the 3,000 shows of practice, my first time on stage in front of people was at a casino here in Kansas City, and there was hardly anybody there, and it was not great either. I had Bell's palsy. The left side of my face was paralyzed, and so I had to talk out of the right side of my mouth, and I was all self-conscious, had no idea how to use the equipment or what I was doing, but nobody saw that. You know, there were maybe 10 people in the bar at that time that saw my first show. And now, after 3,000, when I'm on a show or a stage in front of a video that does 100,000 downloads or a podcast that gets 30,000 downloads, I have all of that practice. So now that what people are seeing is a more finished product, but don't snooze on those early days. Those early days where you get to practice and you get to fail in front of, you know, nobody listening. That's the best part of having a podcast fail, is that nobody noticed. Because you have nothing to lose. If nobody's listening to it, nobody even knew that it existed or that it's gone away.
That's actually a really good point that, you know, we get hung up on, oh my God, I'm going to go out there and maybe we've built up in our mind that there's going to be hundreds of thousands of people listening to this. And unfortunately, I mean, it would be fantastic if you were able to, you know, pull that off in your first couple of episodes. But in most cases, when you're starting out, that's not the case. So we really need to be looking at it. Like you say, it's practice. And don't be afraid of failing, because well, you just start another one. You go again, right? We have the opportunity to kind of rewind, start again, and off you go.
Well, I think that's the beauty part about recording. Now, we're doing a live show here, which is great. Mm-hmm. I love that because that means I have to be fully present. I can't worry about whether I stutter or something. I got to just keep going. And I love that. But when you're new and when you're starting something, don't feel bad about recording 10 videos. I did that this afternoon. I was trying to do a promo for a huge live event that we have in September. Last mm-hmm. time there was 10,000 people on live, and this is a YouTube promo. And I shot it more than 15 times today for a 1 minute video. For whatever reason, I wasn't on my game. It took me a lot of tries, but what I think the great part is you get to keep going. You get to find that next level. My background wasn't like this for my first podcast because I didn't have all of the setup and stuff. So I've added mm-hmm. all of these collectibles and inspiration and stuff over time and built up to who I am. And you find your personality, you find your audience, you find the technology that you like, and things always evolve. So you're going to be as bad at it today as you're going to get. Right. Which yes. I think is good and bad. But if you wait to get good at it, that's not going to happen. The only way to get good is to be bad at it first.
Mm-hmm. And I, you know, on to that point, I heard this many, many years ago. You know, you've just got to get really comfortable at being bad before you can be comfortable at being good. So just, you know, once we sort of take that on board and we accept that, hey, I'm probably not going to be that great the first time I do it, but you do it over. Repetition is going to be your friend. Consistency and repetition, and you just do it over and over and over again. Before you know it, like Mike, you know, you're in the hundreds of thousands of downloads, you're a seasoned professional, and you can then use that skill, because this is quite different, isn't it, Mike, where, you know, a lot of marketers will teach strategy and tactics. This becomes a real skill. And it's a skill that you then can adapt to any situation. So give me some example, like in terms of a skill set, and I'm probably going to put a few words in your mouth here, because I think this is one of those things that becomes the most valuable skills you can ever have, right? Have you experienced, like, would that be your opinion too, that being able to speak and being able to just go when required has been a real skill that's helped you?
Yes, for sure. I was going to go to a slightly different place, which is uh-huh. I think you hit something there that a lot of people don't recognize, which is a lot of people get hung up on the technology or what you're doing or the content and writing and trying to make it perfect and measuring things and in all kinds of things that are way too far down, that I would roll back and just say, you need to make it playful first. You need to have fun mm-hmm. with it first. You need to do it live, be comfortable making mistakes, like lower all of those risks and stakes for you, and be willing to fail spectacularly, to just have fun at what you're doing. And along the way, what you're going to do is focus on who you are and being and becoming the best version of yourself or the type of person that you want to be. So I always kind of have a few pieces of advice here with what you brought up on the skill set, because mm-hmm. I do think it's a skill. It's something that you learn and you practice. I happen to love it. If you're not somebody mm-hmm. who loves it, go find something that you do love and do that. Mm-hmm. But if you want to be on camera and you love it, then figure out how to be yourself in those things. There's a lot of different audiences that I think people miss, is that if you're doing a sales podcast like I do, you kind of need to be outgoing and chatty. Salespeople are outgoing and chatty. They want a lot of value. They want you to be quick. They want you to get right to it. And they want a return on their investment. That's who my audience mm-hmm. is there. Now, when I'm doing the playful human stuff and I'm talking to entertainers, they want to waste time. They want to be silly. They want jokes. The podcast is longer. We have a lot more fluff. We play games like Family Feud in the middle of it. And we don't take ourselves so seriously. But I think, I guess where I was going with those skill sets is, I don't want you to become me. I don't want you to become whoever your favorite person is. So I have, you know, the Bare Naked Ladies. I have my favorite comedy writers like Steve Martin and other people that are inspiration to me. But I can't try and be Steve Martin because that's not who I am. So learning the skill sets for yourself are awesome. Mm-hmm. And then, like you said, it never goes away. So I found, especially with the live, the one that I wanted to hit to actually answer the question you asked was doing it live like this, I think is a special skill set because a ton of people can be recorded. A ton of people can, you know, take 300 takes at it. Mm-hmm. But when you have the ability to stand up on a stage or to go live in a meeting or to host a live event, there's something that's a different skill set about it. And you learn to improvise. You need to learn to not take it so seriously. You learn a skill set that allows you to be a lot more resilient because we can talk about some of my favorite failures, but I did a show on 9/11 here in the United States. I've been maced by police during a show. I was fired live on stage by Billy Idol in front of 4,000 people. And once those things happen to you, you become so resilient. That was the night I became bulletproof as a performer. Nothing on this podcast is going to go so wrong as being fired by Billy Idol. So those are my favorite stories because I know that I have the skill set to do it in one take if I have to, that a lot of other people don't have. And they are different skill sets. So I might not be as good in recorded video as I am live, but I feel like that skill set of being able to do it live allows you to move so much quicker. Because I know people that in radio take, you know, several takes at one break or part I loved about being in radio was the show goes on every day. So we can't write all brand new jokes. We can't script everything out. We don't have time to produce a whole 5-hour show every single day. We got to go on and do it live. And sometimes I struggle with that in sales training or in other jobs that I do where I've had clients of mine, I've performed on big companies like Uber and LinkedIn and Facebook. And sometimes they want to see the whole show. They were like, well, you rehearse it for me. You do the whole hour and then we'll tell you what to fix. And I go, well, guys, I'm making it up as I go along. So you might say you don't like that talk track on slide 6, but that talk track is not going to be the same tomorrow when I deliver it because I'm making it up. And I found that resilience, that skill set to be so much more valuable than trying to be perfect, to try and write it all out, to try and produce every second of a show. It's, to me, it's just not worth the effort.
I'd have to say I'm totally with you, and hence the reason that I actually much prefer the whole live side of things because personally, you know, I've had people, you know, write things for me and script things out, and honestly, I just know me. I just do not... You know, I can do it, and it might take me a few takes, but I much prefer this. But you're absolutely right.
Let's talk about
this
reading real quick, but before you transition, I feel like some people, when they write out their intros and they're reading the scripts of even a bio, I don't give typically a whole lot of bio for the presenters introducing me because I don't want them to. I want them to be real. I want them to say what was most memorable to them about my background and stuff. But I've seen a lot of people when they try and do podcasts, write out a whole 20-minute podcast and then read it. And the problem is you sound like you're reading, where if you're just making it up, you sound like you're conversational. And the jump to go from knowing it so well and memorizing it so well that you don't sound like you're reading anymore means you have to do it like 20 to 40 more times than if you just did it once. So that amount of work, 40 times the effort to maybe make it sound a little bit better, if you even get there, isn't worth the risk to me.
I'm glad you brought that up because in terms of like, you know, I know we talked about this becoming a skill, but I do want to go back to the fact that you said, you know, you've got to allow your playfulness to come out. And to me, that's actually what live does for me. You know, you're not so restricted. I don't feel boxed in. I can just totally be me. And when you're live, you can't be anything but naturally you because it will show through. It's not like I can, you know, I'm not a very good actor. I can't come on here and act to be someone else. One would hope that when you jump on and when you're doing something like a live show like this, it allows you to bring all of you to the table. to be present with your audience, whether you like it or not, whether you intend it that way or not. It is going to happen. So there's some beautiful things that I feel happen when you allow yourself to go live, particularly from a standpoint of growth. You know, and the whole preface of what we were talking about today and what you've gone down the path of doing is really allowing, you know, over time, I think as I started the show with this, we start as adults, we tend to think, oh, I'm an adult now, so therefore I've got to be this professional and, you know, I can't be playful or don't be silly. You know, you can't do any of those things. With what we're saying is embrace all of that, find it all, allow that to come through. So when, in your experience, when people allow that to happen, what actually happens? Like, what are some of the things that you see and the benefits of allowing yourself to be playful? What are they?
So many. And this is really what the crux of my podcast, Playful Humans, is about. And the book that I'm writing on the same subject to five big things. Number one is you connect better with your audience. Think about when you made friends when you were a child, when you learned how to make friends. It was typically when you were playing with other people. And when you're being yourself and when you're putting yourself out there is when you have the chance to actually connect with another human being. Second thing I think is really like a confidence and a mental and physical conditioning that we were just talking about. So when you do it live and when you're putting yourself out there, it breeds this confidence. Even if you feel like an imposter inside, the fact that you're doing it adds to that credibility and confidence that other people see because you're willing to, it's still something that people are terrified of. So I think the old joke from Jerry Seinfeld was on the list of people's greatest fears, public speaking was number one and death was number three. So people would rather be in the coffin than giving the eulogy at a funeral is what they're saying on that survey. Mm-hmm. So even just the fact of doing it, even if you're not good, I think what we don't understand when we're the performer is that the audience is rooting for you. They want you to be good. And if you're struggling, they want to help you and bail you out. They don't want to throw rocks at you and make it worse for you and uncomfortable because they showed up to this video, this event, this show, to get something out of it. And they want you to provide the best value. So they're already rooting for you. I think there's a cultural aspect of this too, that when you're creating something, you're adding value to the culture. And when you add value to the culture, you yourself become more valuable to you and the audience. So when I write a book, when I publish a video, when I've done over 500 episodes of one podcast or 100 of the other, I've created this volume of stuff that's created a culture of people who enjoy it, and it's made an impact on our culture around us. So that's another huge thing that I think a lot of people don't think of right away, is that there's this trait of value that you're bringing. And finally, I would say the big one is creativity. That when you're playful, you come up with new ideas. When I've done 500 episodes of the How to Succeed podcast, 501 has to be something new, or it has to be out of the box. It's not going to be an obvious topic. We covered all the obvious topics in the first 100, right? So now we're doing something that's more interesting, that's more nuanced, that's more targeted to the audience than we ever could have been in our first five shows. And I think same thing by being live, we've already talked about, if there's a mistake, you have to improvise and be creative around how you solve that problem. You come up with new ideas and new connections that you wouldn't have included if you had scripted it all out and played it safe and tried to fit like everybody else. And I think I said last thing, but I'll give you one more, which is when you're actually yourself and playful, you attract other people. So there have been a ton of psychological research and surveys that people who are playful smile more, which makes them look more physically attractive, which makes other people like their content. And people like people that are having a good time and making them feel good. And so when you're specifically nerding out, when you're being playful, when you're being your silly, authentic self, it's more attractive to other people and it separates you out from the competition. So if you do a safe scripted podcast like everybody else's or a live show, it sounds like everybody else's. There's no hook to it. There's no anything special. But when you do it live, when there's mistakes, when there's jokes, when there's your specific quirk in it, that's what makes it unique and valuable to the world, because you're the only one with that voice. And I think that's so awesome.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And sometimes people get to, Mike and I were playing a little game before. Well, I played a little game before we sort of even started this, the podcast today, behind the scenes. And I was like, okay, let me see if I can guess, where is that accent coming from? So I got him to speak a little bit, and I had a little bit of a go at guessing where he came from. And gosh, I might have
nailed it. First guess, you got the state. I mean, there's 50 to choose from. That's pretty good, even if you knew I was in the United States. Do you want to play a game now? I feel like we should take it.
Yeah, let's. Why not?
I unloaded way too much content. That was like a good 5-10 minute filibuster. Are you ready to play?
Let's do it.
Anybody listening live too, you can type in the comments your guesses, or I'll fill you in with the wrong answer. So if you're playing the recording,
here we go.
You can play along too. Just share what you thought. If you had the money, what is something you'd take lessons to learn how to do? What do you think, Tracy?
Oh, well, there's two, actually. I learned to play the piano, and I learned to sing, because I can't do either of those.
Number one answer, music and singing. Congratulations. Number one answer, you get 47 points for that. Other ones on there, dancing lessons, flying lessons. Well, that would be a good one. Driving or racing or skydiving.
Of those would be on. They were all on my list.
Ah, there you go. All right. This is another one. Name a place where people always try to squeeze in one more person. I like this one.
Oh, it's usually squeeze in one more person. Well, for us, it's usually at the dinner table, like going for dinner somewhere. Can I just get one?
Yeah, there you go. Number four answer. You only get 6 points for it, but restaurant table. Car was the number one answer. Car, elevator. That's a good one. Bus.
Oh, yeah.
Church pew or a concert row, something like that. Always try and squeeze in one more person. Good answers. All right, last one. This is my favorite question, and it's a little naughty, but only if you make it that way. During a power failure, name something you can still turn on.
Oh, stop it. You know, most people are going to say their husband, and I could do that any day, any time.
During a power failure or not, yeah. That is number four.
It's going to be like, why did you really say that?
What's a piece of equipment or item that you could turn on during a power failure?
Well, I'd be able to turn my mobile phone on, because it'd be unplugged. And
this was in 2019, and I don't know how phone didn't make the list. I guess if the power was off for a significant amount of time, you couldn't. But flashlight was the number one answer. Radio, the water, or a gas stove or oven.
Yeah, all of them. But, you know, my answer was way better than any of them.
They were, for sure. You did it. You nailed it. Thanks for playing with me.
Oh, that's always a lot of fun. I feel like I was a bit, I should join Family Feud. We might win something.
Yeah, you were nailing them up there. Yeah, I like that.
So I have a lot of fun. See, and this is the sort of stuff, like, guys, at the beginning of today's show, I was like, you know, just listen. Think about some of the things that you can do in your podcast or in your show, and how do you bring humor or a bit of fun to what we're doing? So I want to ask you this question, because I'm sure that over the years you've thought about this and you've even done a lot of study on it. But why is it that as we grow up, we tend to lose our creativity and our playfulness, or we box it and put it in a box over there, and you know, we're adults now, so we're adulting.
Several reasons for this. Most of the research shows that it happens around age 12, which is kind of puberty and stuff, but it's also when people start expecting you to be an adult. So I kind of think it's tied to adulting and people saying you're going to have to be responsible, or we expect you to start working and performing now that you're 12 years old. Under that, when you interview third graders, 80% of them have genius levels of creativity. If you've ever interviewed a kid or something, they'll come up with wacky answers. They're not afraid. They're not self-conscious. They might be nervous of unusual things or things outside their comfort zone, but they don't lack creativity, and they know how to fail and try, and they know how to play and learn through play. As we get, and now, at least in the United States, the research shows that over 80% of kids now are quitting sports because it's not fun anymore by the age of 13. That parents have ruined sports by making it too serious. They're on traveling teams. They're playing tournaments. They're keeping score. It's about winning. It's not playing the game anymore. We've turned it from a recreation activity to work for them. And they're like, well, it's not worth it. And now I think it's even gotten worse. 80%.
Sorry, I just want to grab that stat. 80%. Wow.
But think about even kids in the United States are driving later. When I was a kid, I got my driver's license on the day I turned 16 in the United States. Like, I made my mother take us out of school and go to the driver's license place to get my license on the first day that I could and get my permit the first day that I could to learn. But now kids are driving later and later. They don't have an incentive. There's basically other people that will drive you around. They'll take responsibility for that. And if you make a mistake and you get in a wreck in the school parking lot or something, that's going on social media. Everybody's going to know about it. The downside is so big that people are afraid to fail with that. And these kind of studies that I'm talking about here are all across the board. So whether that's creative writing or drawing or taking any kind of risks, most people stop doing it because they're trading safety and security for actual fun and fulfillment in their life. So we've decided that it's safer to sit down at night and watch 6 hours of Netflix and numb ourselves with food and drugs and alcohol and television than to actually maybe go out. And we might feel bad or we might feel good, but we don't know. There's this safety and security in numbing ourselves out, wasting time, being bored, rather than putting ourselves out there, trying to connect with somebody. You know, I can picture like going on a blind date or going up and doing karaoke or something. Those are things that you might have the best night of your life, or you might have the worst night, you know? And I think that's what people don't want to risk when they get to adulthood. We get into this comfort zone where we just don't want to push ourselves, or we don't care as much about feeling good. We'd rather feel neutral and not feel bad than actually feel good about our lives, which is a shame.
I mean, some of those statistics, you know, when you really think about that, it's like, gosh, you know, because this is happening, like, how does, and there'll be people that are listening today that recognize that, man, I think I might like to give this a go. I might like to bring back a bit of creativity and a bit of fun in my life. Like, how do they do that? Like, what are some of the, maybe even some basic level things that we can do to bring that sense of wonder, that sense of creativity back into our lives and into our work?
I love this question. All mammals on the planet know how to play. So I don't really need to teach you how to play and have fun. Yeah. So if you give a seal a ball, it will play with it. If you give a dog a ball, it'll play with it. If you give a human being a ball, we all speak ball on this planet if you're a mammal. And I've even seen some non-mammals and reptiles playing with balls. But the basic thing is, I think, start small. Reconnect with what you love to do as a child, what you remember doing for fun. I have a quiz on my website. It's playfulhumans.com/quiz, where you can take a quick personality quiz. It's the BuzzFeed style one. And I'll give you some suggestions on stuff to do, but there are different play personalities. You don't have to be outgoing and doing a big show or hosting a big party or anything. You might like puzzles. You might like creating art by yourself and painting or drawing. You might like exploring the woods and going for a hike. That might really be fun for you. You might be an athlete and you like physical challenges, or you want to go skydiving and extreme sports. You might be a gamer and like board games or video games with other people. I think that's the big challenge I would encourage everybody is to do it with somebody else, whatever you like. Even if it's just watching Netflix, doing it with other people so you have a shared experience makes that better and more playful than just isolating yourself from the world. But outside of that, there's a few key things here. You have to lower the risk. There's this big pressure today, especially in startup culture and the people that we work with so much, Tracy, that every moment has to be productive and every activity has to produce an outcome or we have to learn a skill. But I'm telling you, cool research out there. It takes 4 times during play to learn how to do something correctly. It takes over 40 times to learn how to do something if you're working at it and you're pressing and you're trying to be productive. So when we're playing, even if we're playing tag or out on the playground with kids, you're learning skills. You're learning how to negotiate the rules of the game and communicate with other people. You're exercising your body and you're building your muscles. You're using your mind and you're figuring out creative ways around problem solving and building your instincts and stuff, that you are being productive even when you're not trying to be productive, which is the ironic part of it. But finally, I would just say, I've learned that there are a lot of ironic things in life. We've shared a few already, that by being yourself, you appeal to the most amount of people. If you try and be like everybody else, you appeal to the least amount of people. If you try to be productive, you end up being less productive. If you try to overwork and push your business really hard, the world pushes back. But if you try to be playful, if you just do it for fun, if you do what turns you on and what makes you happy, other people are attracted to that and it becomes amplified out. When you let go of stuff is when it can become what it needs to be. And it's a weird, ironic process of laws. There's a lot of philosophical researchers and stuff that talk about it, but it's like going to sleep or going to the bathroom, right? The more you try to fall asleep, the less likely you are to do it. And I feel like the same thing is with play. So don't put it in your calendar. Don't work really hard at it. You don't have to like join a league or force yourself to do it. Go spend $5-$10 on a game or a toy or something that makes you happy and just enjoy your life.
Enjoy it. You know, just like, you know, when you say you can only, I'm going to ask you this question and it'll if you want to take it to a particular place, you'll end up taking it there, but it's totally up to you. That's how the mind works, right? It's like if you say don't see blue trees, you're probably going to find a blue tree somewhere. Our mind just doesn't work that way. It's almost counterintuitive, isn't it? I mean, so fascinating, all of this and how to bring that sense of wonder, that sense of play to everything that we're doing. And we, like you say, we get afraid of doing that. And I want to come back to this because, like, when we're creating, say, a podcast or our own live show, you know, we're always, you've heard lots, you've got to lead with value, give loads and loads of value. And we're saying, but do it also by bringing you to the table. And you mentioned that, you know, you do a lot in the sphere of entertainment. And as adults, if, you know, you're thinking about creating your own show or your own podcast, you're thinking, oh, okay, well, I'm going to educate people. I'm going to educate and give them what they need because that's what's valuable. And in fact, what we're talking about now is almost a meld of the two. It's edutainment. You know, it's bringing the education, but wrapping around that a level of entertainment, a level of interest, creativity, and a whole lot of you to the table, because like Mike has pointed out, that's what makes you unique. That's what makes you attractive. And that's what enables other people to say, hey, those two are pretty cool. I want to listen to what they're talking about, or I want to go and explore more of the things that they speak about. So in this world where, you know, the human's attention span, I think it's under 7 seconds now. We have
we lost a goldfish. Goldfish officially have a longer attention span than humans. Yeah.
It's a bit crazy, isn't it? And that's because there's so much information coming at us from all sorts of different directions on the regular. So you have to find the one thing that cuts through and can enable you to attract others and command the attention. And if you haven't already figured this out, Mike has already said, that one thing, that special sauce, it's you. You are the one thing. You are the person. Nobody else can be like you. They might try to emulate you. They might try and be like you, but nobody can. It's just, that's how special this whole process is. So I know that you've worked a lot with people, even that are experiencing burnout. And in this, I'm going to say, high-paced world where, you know, it's almost like this hustle, hustle, hustle mentality. And we're getting ourselves to a point where we are hustling ourselves into burnout. How does one recognize that? And then what is, like, I know we don't have to teach people how to play because we all know, you know, innately how to do that. We're born to play with others. But when you, how do you recognize that, hey, I'm going down a path of, gosh, I might hit burnout, or what I'm doing right now is not serving me well? And what are some of the things that they could do immediately to try and counter that?
I think the first thing I want to say is, don't think about it as on or off. Think of it as like waveforms or cycles. And so I'm not always outgoing and entertaining and playful. I also take nap in the afternoons so that I can do this at night, or I'll spend time reading by myself so that I can replenish and challenge my mind at different times. But few things come to mind off the top here. Number one is, Howard Thurman was a former Supreme Court justice in the United States, has one of my favorite quotes of all time. He said, "Don't ask what the world needs, ask what makes you come alive, and then go do that." Because what the world needs is more people who have come alive. And so I think going back to what your point was about your show, but also what you're doing for your career, is if you're trying to do a survey and analyze what the world needs and twist and form yourself into, you know, a round peg in a square hole to be what other people you think other people want, you're going to cause yourself a lot of stress and you're going to get burned out and you're not going to be able to sustain that. But if you find out what makes you come alive, there are 7 billion people on the planet. You can find enough people who want that. And when you find people that want that, you're the only one that can deliver it, and it becomes so much more valuable. And you can be yourself all day long without getting burned out. You can do what you love quite a bit before you get burned out. A couple of other things here. Research studies. This is another one of my favorite ones here, Tracy, that a research study was done that if you work more than 60 hours for more than 6 weeks in a row, you get so tired and burn out that you actually produce less than if you had just worked 40 hours those whole 6 weeks. So what we're doing when we're getting burned out is we think we're working hard. We think we're getting more done because we're putting more hours in, but we're not looking at the results. If you take a nap, you walk away from a challenge, and then you come back and you fix it when you have energy, your mind can be more creative. It comes up with better solutions. You can be more productive. When you burn yourself out, even for me doing what I love and doing podcasts and shows, if I do, I had one day a couple of weeks ago where I had 3 sales classes I taught. It's selling, not spelling. And then I recorded 2 podcasts, and then I did 2 game shows at night. And by the end of the day, I was spent. And for the next 2 days, I had to spend recovering from that. Now, it was a really fun day. I made a ton of money. It was a very productive day for me, but I couldn't do that every single day. My shows the next day would have been terrible if I had tried to do them. So I learned to kind of space those things out. When I can, I try to just do a couple of things that are high energy, high productive a day, do a couple of things that are really fun for me, and do a couple of things that are just resting. So whether that's taking a meal, doing a meditation, or watching a show that I like, give myself space between things. We've gotten into this culture where we're trying to go from one thing to the next, and especially working virtual, we end one Zoom meeting and we start another one, and then we jump to Teams, and then we get back on our email. And we don't forget that we used to at least have to walk from another room and take a 5-minute break to go to the bathroom between meetings when we were live, that we're all just burning out and trying to do way too much. Most people overestimate what they can do in a day, and they underestimate what they can do in a year or a lifetime. So slow down. Don't take yourself so seriously. You got plenty of time as long as you're taking action on the right things and taking steps forward every day. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Yeah. I want to ask, because we've got a lot of people that are really interested in like creating their own shows, creating their own podcasts. And I've got a few, I suppose, very specific questions for you, someone who's been in this game for some time. So with, you know, creating charisma, because there's quite a big difference, right, between, and maybe there isn't in your opinion, but being on stage, doing one-on-ones compared to, say, doing a podcast or even a live video show like this. Like, how do you bring a level of charisma and a level of magnetism to each of those different modes of delivery?
They're all different, right? So I think that's the challenging part. So when I'm creating something or when I'm going to do something, I think about the message I'm trying to get around, who I am, who the audience is, what the medium is. If it's a podcast, I know that I can't show a lot of visuals. I know that people are not going to see my body language and my face or be able to tell if I'm joking, right? If I'm being really sarcastic, especially in written words, when I do blogs and books and stuff, that's a completely different mode of communication. So length has a huge part of it. So when I create a podcast for salespeople, I knew I wanted it to be about 15 minutes, the length of a commute or a drive to a client's office where they could listen to a show by the time they get there and they would get something out of it. And they weren't going to listen to a 3-hour, podcast that drones on and on in that case. But when I'm doing other things, if it's more entertainment or playful and it's a longer format stuff, I do, 2-day conferences and boot camps and stuff too. There, I know that I have to basically break that into a bunch of different chunks. And so I have to think about how do I get people to move and out of their seat? How do I give them breaks to talk and ask questions? Where do I plan different activities? But in short, I kind of take all of that information into my head. And then I look at the basic writing format. I need an opening, something that's going to get their attention. I want to close with a bang. And then they can really only remember 3 things. So human beings have a certain amount of capacity that if you give somebody a list of 10 things, they're not going to remember all 10. They're going to remember the first one and the last one, and maybe whichever one in the middle resonated the most with them. Mm-hmm. So what 3 things in an hour or in a 15-minute podcast, or if I have 5 minutes, even I was shooting that 1-minute video today. Like 1 minute is not a lot of time, especially when I had some details to give out about the registration links and bonuses and stuff. So it's like, what are the 3 sentences that I really want people to hear in this 1 minute? If I'm doing a 2-day workshop, what are the 3 things I want them to have completed or to take action on or to remember when they leave? I want almost everybody to sing the same 3 stories when they left that. And then outside of that, I think, now how do I bring my personality to it? How do I make it fun? How do I make sure the audience gets involved and create some sort of break or pattern interrupt whenever it starts to get boring? But I can nerd out on this for a long time. So I would love to hear, do you have any follow-up questions or maybe a specific example for me? Cause I'd love to take another swing at this.
We use this live situation, right? So I'm just thinking, I mean, I absolutely do. We've got steps and various different things that you would do to help, create your stage presence, so to speak. But in a format like this, like what are some maybe 3 things that you think are super important to utilize when doing a live show?
Number one is, like I said, start strong. So when you turn your camera on, be smiling already. A lot of people have this, like they're focused, they're preparing, and they get this like scowl and they're really serious and they're trying to read the intro. So they're looking off camera or something, but just be yourself. Let it realize that when it goes on, a lot of people aren't even there yet either. But if they're watching the recording, that's their first moment of you. And we all make these first impressions with our personality, with our background. What kind of colors or music do we have playing? Think about that opening experience of sets the tone for everything else. I think it's also a really great place to make a promise, like you did at the top of this one, of what they're going to experience throughout the rest of the show, to kind of set expectations. It lets people lower their guard, but also understand like how it's going to be and what's going to happen. So they're not having to guess, or they're not going to wonder, is he going to get, or is she going to get to that one question at the end, or are they going to do Q&A? If there is, like, tell them up front. If they can comment and participate, tell them up front so they're not sitting there waiting to think about it, or they can type in questions and you can have them ready when you get there. So open strong. Number 2, I would say, is you want to know what you want to say, but not how you're going to say it. So we already talked about the scripts. I like a few bullet points, or I kind of call them like benchmarks or flags that I want to hit as we go through. So somewhere, if we got an hour show, let's say, somewhere in the first 15 minutes, I want to talk about this. Somewhere in the middle 15 minutes, I want to do this activity to change the pace and then transition to the second topic. Somewhere around the 30-minute mark, I need to get the audience involved because they've been sitting here for 30 minutes. So I need an interaction, and that's going to be my cue somewhere around 30. It could be 25 or it could be 35 or 40 minute mark, but I know that I need to get them changing that energy again. And so I think those three kind of benchmarks in the middle really help. And I try to make them all three different things, like one that's interactive, maybe one that's a compelling story or energy mood change. Right. And then in the last segment is really where I think you want to go for the calls to action, what you want people to do, and give yourself time to land the plane. A lot of people make the mistake of going to the last minute and then they go, okay, here's all the links and here's what I want you to do. And blah, blah, blah. You can share the links throughout the whole podcast or live show at any time. So I share links and stuff whenever they come up organically or in the middle so that people hear them when they're paying attention and before people drop. But then also you want to have 5 to 10 minutes to get their questions, let the guest have a final swing at something and really take your time to land the plane. I know for YouTube and other things, you want engagement right to the end. You don't want a kind of a slow drop off, but I think it gives you a chance to bounce back up in the energy too and change your pace a little bit if you think about how you want to land. And then the final few seconds end with a bang, something memorable, and you know, leave people laughing or play an outro song, something to send them on their way with a good positive feeling, because it's that first, last, and feeling that people remember.
And I'm glad you've brought that that up, you know, the feeling and the energy. And I find that particularly if you're doing a live show like this or even doing a podcast, it's really important to think about the energy that you're going to bring in. And often we have to really up the ante or, you know, up the level of energy, because a lot of it does get lost through through the camera and through the microphone. Yeah. So just making sure that we're on and we're really, you know, you're bringing that level of energy to what it is that you're doing.
I'll add on to that one. I always start fast. I talk faster. Some people tell me to slow down, but man, you can think 1,000 words a minute. You can only talk about 100 words a minute, and you can listen about 150 words a minute. So your audience is thinking about 10 times as fast as you can talk. Now you want to be legible on important stuff. You do want to pause and give people a chance to digest that and feel those emotions if you're telling a story, but in generally you can move a lot faster than you think you can move. Number two is I learned this when I was DJing in bars and clubs. Yeah. When you have 400 drunk people in front of you, you don't want to be on high octane the whole time. Number one, if people are on the dance floor, they're not buying drinks. So the club that paid you to show up and do, they want you to play a downer song every once in a while. And so I'll play a slow song. Everybody will go, they'll get a fresh beer or beverage. They spend money and then they come back and I can bring them back. And I think remembering that you can always bring the audience back and you can bring the energy back up allows you to not worry about the parts that drop a little bit. People need a break. They need rest. Just like we were talking about the cycle in your day. But man, if I'm playing an Irish pub on St. Patrick's Day, I got to watch that energy. I'm an energy management business, and it's not to make it go bonkers. It's to make it right up to the point that it's fun, no more or no less. Keep it there as long as I can and then bring it down and reset. And I think for your audience, it's the same thing. They can't listen with full intent. We've already talked about attention spans for that long. So you can lose people and you can bring them back and it's okay.
And that's an awesome point, is that, and that comes back to knowing and understanding your audience. Where am I? What, gauging the audience, understanding. And as you say, you're in the business of energy management. So just when you can start out with that, what am I trying to achieve? Who is my audience? And knowing that you want to make sure that you have some pace, some peaks and troughs in what you're talking about, because it allows them to stop for a minute, absorb the information, and then you can go again, because it's really difficult for somebody to stay high all the time. You'll blow a gasket. So we don't want to do that. The last question I've got, somebody who's been, and we covered this early on, is that, you know, if you're starting out, you have to start somewhere. The best time to start was, 7 years ago, or it's today. Mm-hmm. So you just get going. You don't worry too much. You allow yourself a bit of creativity and some space to just enjoy the process, get yourself going. But after a number of years, like, what are your secrets to getting a, a, a decent number of downloads. Like, how did you increase the number of downloads over time? What's your secret to success there?
Yeah, two things to longevity that I think are key. Number one is developing a format that's sustainable. So both of my shows are interview podcasts. If I was trying to write something, I wouldn't have gotten to 500 shows. I would have run out of ideas myself. So I can always find someone else, like I said, with 7 billion people to make it interesting. But also with interview shows, you tap into that other person's audience every time that you talk to somebody. So, you know, it's a slow, gradual and incremental growth over time. A lot of people think that going viral solves their problem. I've interviewed people that have won American Idol and a person that won Survivor in the United States, and guys that had number one singles. I don't know if you know, do you know any 90s rap, Tracy? The Whoomp There It Is song? Tag Team? I interviewed DC Glenn, one of the rappers in Tag Team. And his song was massive. I mean, it went tides of success. But now, 25 years later, that doesn't help him. He's got to rebuild it, and he still has to do things to continuously be creative. So understanding that anything that goes viral or is a big spike is kind of gravy on top. What I want is just gradual, incremental growth of a little bit over time. But the biggest key for me has always been leveraging other people's audience. So we mentioned my book, LinkedIn, The Sandler Way. It was picked up by LinkedIn, who sent it out to everybody that was a Sales Navigator subscriber. So in like the first month, it got 80,000 downloads. I didn't have anything to do with that. I tapped into their audience. Sandler has a large audience. They train 30 to 50,000 people a year for the last 50 years. So they have millions of people that they've trained, and they share that book out. So the book was a success. It had nothing to do with me doing it. It was me leveraging other people's audiences. Same thing with the podcast, getting other people to share it, or finding an association or group of people that it's valuable for, I think helps a lot. Finding a sponsor that will share it, even if they don't give you money, if they just make it their podcast, they will do a lot of work. They have a bigger audience than you do typically, and they'll share it to more people.
I mean, this is such, you know, we could go down this rabbit hole, and there's so many things that we could talk about when it comes to, you know, podcasting and getting your message out there and even finding the message that you have inside of you to share. Like, that's a whole, multiple sessions on its own. So you just never know. We could come back and talk more about that. But I think the point is that we just get going, right? And it's more of a slow burn than I'm going to get going and have a blazing fire right off the bat, because you want to have longevity. You want to build something that's on a good foundation. And I think that point of you talking about, you know, thinking about the format in which you want to run. And I'm just going to say, hey guys, funnily enough that Mike should bring that up, because my team and I are actually just in the process of creating a few new and really interesting quizzes that are going to help you to determine what's the right format that should I run with based on my own, like, my own personality. You know, you don't want to be doing a format that doesn't fit with your personality. So we've got a bunch of those coming out, even looking at your show persona. So just keep your eyes peeled. I'll mention them in some future shows that are coming up so that you guys can go and do these quizzes and really start to understand what is the right podcast or show format and style and way that you can move forward to create amazing content to be able to share your knowledge and your experience with others. I also want to let Mike share where you guys can go to get involved in more of what Mike's doing. So do you want to share with everybody the link or the, let me just grab it. I'll see if I can pull it up here.
Playfulhumans.com.
So do you want to tell everybody a little bit about what Playful Humans is and why they should join?
Well, these are people that play for a living. So I mentioned rappers, magicians. I interviewed a surfing dog on my podcast, mostly his owner and partner. But he was on the entire podcast. you can look up Derby, California and Playful Humans on YouTube there. But I would say, yeah, go do what you love, because I enjoy doing the show, whether anybody listens or not. So I get to interview all these cool, playful people that help me and give me advice and coach me in my career. You've helped me with ideas. for podcasts, and hopefully I've helped you with things so that even if nobody listens, I'm getting tremendous value out of just doing it. But that being said, I'm trying to collect more people that are cool, fun, playful humans. So if you want to be a part of that club, go to playfulhumans.com. All the links and information are there, the quiz, the podcast, or the videos, playfulhumans.com. And, join me, give me ideas, help me out, be creative. I would love to hear from you.
And a couple of, so guys, if you're watching right now, you can see the, you can see that URL at the bottom of the screen right now. So club.playfulhumans.com, or just head on over to playfulhumans.com. I think after today's show, you guys are going to want, as we started out, and he has not disappointed, in terms of bringing to the show a level of playfulness. You want to be around people just like Mike, right? You want to be around people who are enjoying fun, who are living their life unlocked. He's an absolute, credit to the fact that he is living his life in that way. And if you want to hang out with some other, I'm sure, amazing humans, then you head on over to playfulhumans.com. I want to make sure also that people have an opportunity to listen to Mike's podcast. So if you're somebody who, wants to learn how to succeed, you know that Mike is the host of the show, How to Succeed. We'll make sure that these go into the show notes for today, so you can see them in the description, and also the podcast, Playful Humans Podcast. So if you want more of Mike Montague, those are the two places that you can go. But I want to say thank you so much to Mike for just being here, being present today, bringing his humor, having a little bit of fun, and just saying, guys, don't take life too serious. Just go and be yourself and share your message with the world through podcasting or through doing your own live show. And do you need anything special? Yes, you. You are the special sauce in all of this. Nothing else, because nothing else really matters. You just bring that to the table. And if you need some tactics, some strategies, and, trying to figure out, don't get hung up on the technology, because when you tap into people like Mike and myself, we can show you the way and show you how to do that. So I want to say thanks very much for being an awesome human on today's show. Mike, it's been an absolute pleasure having you here. I'm looking forward. I'll continue to listen to some of your podcast episodes. And you just never know. We might have Mike back at another time. And we might do some fun stuff, a little bit different on the Unlock show coming
games,
up.
Yeah.
You just never know. Yeah, we can do some games and some other cool stuff. But thank you. Is there anything that you want to, like, there's one piece of advice or a message that you would like to share with our listeners today? What would that be?
If you're going to pee in the shower, you have to be the one in the shower. My wife was very upset. I had to end with something funny. Go play, go have fun, do what makes you happy, and just spend some time on yourself. It's totally worth it. Life's short. Have fun.
Oh my God. We got to wrap up the show right now, but I want to tell you guys, gosh, that story that you just told there, funnily enough, when my kids were little, as you do, I had three little boys, but at the time, two little boys, you throw them in the shower together. And my husband's grandmother had them at this time and was showering them. And apparently one of them got out of the shower and said, "Nan, Tyrone peed on my feet." And she wrote in that particular story into Women's Weekly. It actually got published in a magazine, that exact story. So that made me have a little bit of a smile and a bit of a giggle as you told that. But yeah, your wife would not appreciate that, I'm sure. So let's just wrap this show up for today, because we could go on and on about all sorts of fun and wonderful things. But you guys know that with every single show we do in Unlocked, we want to make sure that you walk away and that you actually action what you hear on today's show. So I want to just wrap up by saying, hey, go find that inner child. Go bring back a level of creativity and playfulness in your life, in whatever area that means. If that's your, in your life, I mean, so across your business, your family, and just your life in general. And the second is, as I started the show out, it was like, take note of what Mike does in today's show. And you can, take notes of that and emulate some of it, but your own style and your own personality if you are going to create your own live show or your own podcast. But I say thank you very much to everybody for joining another episode of The Unlocked Show. As you know, I'm Tracy Wilson, and we'll be back again with another episode of Unlocked this Friday, 10 a.m. Brisbane time. We go live twice a week, Wednesdays and Fridays at 10 a.m. So guys, go away and live your life unlocked, because you know I say there is just no other way. Thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you again on Friday. Thanks, guys, and bye for now.